This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Should Wisconsin voters be able to approve ballot initiatives, essentially giving them the chance to set laws in Wisconsin, sidestep the legislature? Governor Tony Evers said maybe yeah earlier this week. Evers proposed amending the state constitution to allow initiatives, in part to allow citizens to do things like repeal the state's 1849 ban on almost all abortion. Here's Governor Evers speaking on Wednesday.
If Republican legislators aren't going to uphold the will of the people, then the people of the state should have the right to take a stand at the ballot box.
That's Democratic Governor Tony Evers. Republican Senator Ron Johnson hinted at the idea as well this last week with the concept of giving citizens more of a voice on an issue. He told the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel last week he thinks the 1849 law should have exceptions for rape and incest and that, quote, we really ought to poll the citizens and I'd rather do it through a direct referendum, unquote. Many states do have a binding referendum process to change laws. Wisconsin does not. Leading Republicans in the state legislature say they don't want to make that change. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you want to have this thing in Wisconsin like some states have where voters go to the poll to vote up or down to change a particular law? Do you think it's a good idea? Do you worry about problems with it? Would you like the opportunity to vote on, say, laws about abortion in particular? Call it at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. If you live in one of our neighboring states, like Michigan with an initiative process, how does it work there? 800-642-1234 is the number to call. Susan Stokes is the Tiffany and Margaret Blake Distinguished Service Professor and Director of the Chicago Center on Democracy at the University of Chicago. So welcome to Central Time.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Well, we've got, you know, occasionally we get to vote on local funding referenda or advisory referenda. We can have a constitutional amendment that starts in the legislature. But we read headlines in Wisconsin and other states where they just go and vote on a law. How common is that around the country?
It's pretty common. There, the majority of states have some kind of ballot initiative provision. And what you've been pointing to is a basic difference between referendums, which are put on the ballot by usually the legislature, and initiatives that go on the ballot because citizens have proposed them, and there's usually a signature drive, a petition to put them on the ballot. And there's been, you know, a lot of interest, I think, recently in the ballot initiative because that gives citizens, at least in theory, a chance to really initiate legislation that the legislature may want to avoid.
Right. We've heard people refer to the will of the people, and a vote like this, whether it's started, you know, initiated by lawmakers or initiated by people, as a direct vote, as a more democratic way to represent the will of the people. What do you think of that argument?
You know, I think that it's an argument that gains credibility because we see political elites, resisting the decisions of the people when they go the way they don't want to. In other words, if this weren't a threat at all to the political, you know, political class, political leaders, they would not bother to resist initiatives that go through that they don't like. And there are a number of examples in recent years where petitions drives have put a measure on the ballot and there's a decision that goes against the preferences of the majority of the legislature, and the legislature tries to find ways to keep from having to kind of follow the will of the people. But it certainly can be, you can have a happy story where the people, where you force public policy a little closer to the preferences of what we political scientists call the median voter, sort of the typical average position of somebody in the state, even when the legislature may be a little bit off that median because of gerrymandering or rural biases and so forth.
Do you see a potential downside or an actual downside for these citizen-initiated ballot measures?
Well, California has a long history of tawdry ones. In fact, the academic literature, it takes a pretty dim view of citizens' initiatives because it has been very focused on the California experience. So you get fake citizens' initiatives, often referred to as AstroTurf. So, you know, there's true grassroots and then there's fake grass, which is AstroTurf. And that's when lobbyists come in or maybe some special interest comes in and puts a measure on the ballot, maybe to get something through that they want to get through themselves, but often it's to kind of counter an initiative initiative put on the ballot by people, by real citizens that they don't like. So there are problems. There also are problems, you know, we see frequently legislatures just saying, we're not going to do that, or going to court to sort of say, to get courts to say that there's a legal reason not to allow the change to be made that's been proposed, imposing like regulations that kind of basically go against the spirit of the initiative. So it's not just getting something passed is often not the end of the story.
We heard from Brett in Milwaukee, who couldn't stay on the line. He says he's been wondering for a long time why referenda aren't more common in our democracy, including at the federal level. How do we stack up compared to the rest of the democratic representative government world, Susan, when it comes to these kind of votes?
So a majority of countries of democracies around the world do have mechanisms of direct democracy, mostly referendums, to some extent citizen initiatives. The United States is unusual in not having referendums at the national level. Why we don't have them more often, like why we don't see them more often in the world? Well, it's, you know, if you think about it, representative government means turning, you know, voting for who we want to make decisions and then turning over decision making to them. And often the people who are our representatives are reluctant to give the people the right to make decisions. So usually you have to explain why they're doing that in the first place. And it's interesting to watch what's the discussion in Wisconsin, because it hints at some of the reasons why politicians do decide to turn decision-making over to the people again. One is that they're trying to work around a kind of reluctant, recalcitrant opposition or legislature. Another is they're just trying to kind of protect themselves from responsibility. They can say, you know, I'm not sure what I want about on, say, abortion, but let's just let the people decide.
We're talking to Susan Stokes from the University of Chicago, looking at citizen ballot initiatives to change state laws, something Wisconsin doesn't have. Senator Ron Johnson raised the notion, at least, of an advisory vote on abortion. Governor Tony Evers suggested a constitutional amendment to make this possible in the state. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you want this from Wisconsin, a way for citizens, maybe a petition drive? It gets something on a statewide ballot. If it's passed, it goes into law. We don't have that here right now. Should we? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. We'll pick up the conversation coming up here on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're talking to Susan Stokes from the University of Chicago, looking at ballot initiatives and referenda, how they work in different states and countries. After two top incumbent politicians up for re-election floated the notion here in Wisconsin. You can join in with your thoughts at 800-642-1234. Have a mini referendum on referenda. Kevin starts us off in Janesville. Kevin, hi.
Hi. I would very much be in favor of citizen-initiated balloting like this. If the legislature is not going to represent the will of the people, then we should be able to go around them. They are supposed to be our representatives, not our leaders. Thank you.
Kevin, thanks for the call. And that notion you mentioned a few moments ago, Susan, when people feel like they aren't represented by leaders in heavily gerrymandered states in one direction or another, that I think is a fairly common feeling.
You know, and there are some happy stories to tell about public policy becoming more representative as a result of citizen initiatives. And one of the recent ones that worked out well from that perspective is in Missouri, not very far away from either me in Illinois or you in Wisconsin, where in 2020, there was a citizen initiative to force the legislature to accept Medicaid expansion. The legislature, for I think kind of ideological reasons, was resistant to that. They talked about problems with, you know, eventually where would the funding come from and so forth. But there was a lot of groundswell of opinion that the state should accept Medicaid expansion. And it was put on the ballot and it passed. It passed quite by a substantial margin. The legislature tried to not comply with the decision, and eventually went to the state Supreme Court, and the Missouri State Supreme Court said, no, this was a legitimate initiative. Everything was done properly. And this is now the law. So Medicaid expansion had to happen. There are all kinds of less happy stories I could tell you, but it certainly is, I think Kevin is right. It's certainly possible to redress some of the problems of gerrymandering and just the kind of polarization we have where state legislators are often elected from districts that are heavily gerrymandered or just very, very extreme with regard to partisan identification. And that means that they're not accountable to a larger state constituency. And so the initiative can redress that problem.
Thanks for that call at 800-642-1234. William joins us now in Green Bay. William, hi.
Good afternoon. This is a very interesting subject because my pet peeve is I look at politicians themselves and I really feel like there should be term limits for them because I don't believe that this was set up to be a career. And unfortunately, too many people get in for a very long period of time. And I always think, well, who's going to vote themselves to not have a job after a certain period of time? And so I think that being able to have a referendum from a state standpoint, to be able to put that out there and change that if that's what the will of the people becomes.
Interesting. So, William, thanks for the call. So a citizen initiative as a balance to maybe the entrenched personal interests of long-term legislators, Susan.
Yeah, no, interesting. I think term limits is a slightly different topic. Mm-hmm. I think many political scientists sort of feel that the downside with term limits is that they potentially turn the office holder into sort of a dictator in their last term. That is, they're no longer accountable to voters, and so they can kind of go off into doing things that may be more of particular interest to them. But you know, there's another side to that argument as well. Let me just point out, Rob, that it's interesting to be talking, probably appropriate to be talking about initiatives and referendums on a day when Russia has begun an initiative process in another country to get people to, in a situation of war, to get Ukrainians to vote to join Russia. So if you want an example of the most extreme abuse of a referendum, there you have it.
I wanted to ask you about that. That's an extreme example, but it is not uncommon in the world for this would be a referendum initiated by a leader to abuse this process to grant someone more power, right?
Happens a lot. And it's happened in Russia before. Speaking of term limits, weakening term limits, Putin held a referendum that allows him, that aggrandized his power and also got him out of term limits. When you have a semi-dictator or a kind of elected autocrat who holds referendums, or that usually is for very self-interested reasons. You often find that the information available to voters is very limited. So in general, those are not good examples of honest sort of expression of the popular will. On the other hand, it does sometimes happen that dictatorships hold referendums to try to extend their rule and give themselves more legitimacy, and they lose. So that happened in Chile under Pinochet in 1988. They kind of locked themselves into a process of a referendum on extending the rule of Pinochet. And lo and behold, everybody's surprised that they lost, and the no side won, and that was the beginning of the transition to democracy in Chile. Now, that's a less common than the kind of darker story of these referendums and initiatives being abused under these kinds of regimes.
Susan, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
My pleasure. Thank you.
That's Susan Stokes, professor and director of the Chicago Center on Democracy at the University of Chicago. She joined us for a look at binding statewide referendum votes, which we currently don't have here in Wisconsin. Coming up, the product of a years-long effort to uncover the history of racism on UW-Madison's campus is now open to the public. We'll talk to the curator of the new Sifting and Reckoning exhibit. Now it's the Wisconsin Public Radio Fall Member Drive. Ellen Clark is with me. The largest source of funding for WPR programs comes from listeners like you. This drive is your chance to support all the programs you listen to throughout the year. Take that important step when you give at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552.
And it is an important step because we have a dollar-for-dollar match up to $3,000 in effect right now. It is a great time to donate because current members, including a member in Iola, will double every single dollar you give. It's their way of inspiring you to support Wisconsin Public Radio, so double the impact of your gift right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. 2552.
In that last conversation, we looked at the idea of these statewide ballot initiatives. Not a thing in Wisconsin, but it came up over this last week. Two incumbent candidates for statewide office brought it up. We dug into how these things work, what they mean, the pros and the cons. It's something we do a lot with big issues. Often as they arise on the campaign trail, we step away from the heat of the political ads and dig into what we know, what we don't know about these important topics. It's the kind of conversation you can count on here on Central Time.
That's right. And WPR is listener supported. So that means your donation at WPR.org or 888-202-2552 makes those many topics you tune in for every day possible. Choose an amount that works for you and then make your gift.
If you're looking for an easy way to make a gift to WPR, become a sustaining member with automatic monthly contributions from your bank account or credit card.
And a lot of people give $15 a month on this plan. Some give $100 a month. The amount is completely up to you. As a sustainer, you're an ongoing member of WPR, and you provide reliable funding for your favorite radio station. Start today at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You've heard a lot of election coverage on Central Time in the last year. There's more to come between now and Election Day on November 8th. You value this extensive coverage. It helps you understand the issues and make informed decisions.
And Wisconsin Public Radio and NPR are your sources for reporting the analysis you need this election season. It's just that simple. Your support is vital. You keep our entire community up to date with your gift at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Get your enamel pin, a brand new design available today only while supplies last with your gift of any amount, and get the dollar amount of your gift matched right now. It all makes it a great time to give, a great day to give this first day of the drive. Support your favorite public radio network with your gift right now. Online at WPR.org or give us a call at 888-202-2552. And thank you so much for your support of Wisconsin Public Radio.